Hey guys, welcome back to Hello, My Name is True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, my name's Kayla.
My name is Travers.
And...
Why did I do that? My name's Travers. So...
He doesn't know his name.
What is my name?
Oh no.
Where am I?
So we're back. Another episode. Yay.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Obviously.
We want to thank everybody that came to our event on Saturday.
Indeedio, so we most certainly do.
It was so fun, you guys.
I don't know if I'd say fun
fun.
As like, I just felt weird because, like, I didn't really, you know, like, say a whole lot. So I kind of just stood up there and, you know.
I'm the Jabber Dolls, I guess.
No, you're just, you know, super passionate. And you had a lot to discuss and talk about and cover. So it was really good. It was very informative. You did an excellent job. Wonderful presentation.
Thanks. We got to meet the coolest bunch of teachers ever.
Yeah, we did.
Like, the coolest teachers ever.
If you guys would have showed up, you would have gotten to meet them too.
Mm-hmm. They were rad.
They were pretty rad.
They were cool. Yeah. So today's case is a doozy. That's for sure.
What's a doozy?
It's just, it's pretty crazy.
Sounds like
it
would smell bad.
It's a missing persons case, so it's unsolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from the 90s. A lot of you might recognize this case. A lot of you might not. Either way, you're going to learn about it. So you ready to jump in?
I say yeah.
All right, let's get started.
Let's just do it.
Memorial Day weekend for many college students is the time to pack up and go home, celebrate the long holiday weekend with their friends and family. And in 1996, for many of the California Polytechnic State University students,
well done.
It was the same. They were all leaving campus to spend the long weekend home with their friends and family, while 19-year-old Kristen Smart decided to just stick around campus and hang out with her friends that she had met during her first year studies in the communications department after she had switched from her architecture major. Kristen called home on the evening of Friday, May 24th, and she left a message for her parents that she had some really great news. She had finally spoken with one of her professors that she had been trying to get in contact with about a biology exam that had been misplaced earlier in the year. And finally, they got back to her and told her that she would be allowed to retake it. So she was in, like, super good spirits and really pumped to get on with the weekend. She also stated in the call, or I should say in the voice message, that she would call them on Sunday, as she did pretty much every Sunday, like clockwork, to kind of talk about the news before hanging up. With the end of the semester nearing in the next week or so, Kristen wanted to really just enjoy the weekend before returning home for the summer. So at around 8:30 p.m., she met up with a group of friends, and this would include Margarita Campos, I believe is how you say her name.
Margarita?
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
And a group of other girls. They all just kind of drove around campus for a few hours looking for something to do. Just something typical. We live near a college town, and it's a pretty normal thing to do, really. Finally, Kristen had told them about a birthday party that was just off of Cal Poly's campus, and it was kind of like an unofficial frat house, and I've seen those before. Like, they're not, like, right with all the dorms. They're kind of, like, off campus slightly that are rented out for college students. So that's pretty much what this was like an unofficial frat house.
Right on. I actually went to grade school with a Ocampo. That was his name.
Ocampo?
It was Ocampo.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Weird. So it was like
kind of similar. Yeah. So none of the girls really wanted to spend the night at the frat house with this known rowdy crowd. And Kristen had insisted that they drop her off the party anyways. She did, however, ask her friend Margarita again and again to just come with her. As she climbed out of the truck, she asked one more time. But again, they had been pretty adamant about the fact that they did not want to go, so they weren't really going to accompany her before she shut the door and headed for the party about 10 p.m., And I just want to note that Margarita did say that Kristen was a little upset with her. She could tell when she was climbing out of the truck that she was kind of, you know, I mean, I get it. Like, being a teenage girl, you want your group of friends to come with you. You don't want to be, like, the only person walking in the door at a big house party. So, like, I totally get that.
I don't know. I wouldn't have cared. So, Kristen, being a tall, pretty blonde, made her way through the party, talking with many other students she knew from class. As the night went, some of them had noticed that she seemed to be highly intoxicated, but some claimed they never noticed her with a drink in her hand. At one point, she was seen kissing a boy that had attended the party and introducing herself as Roxy. Other guests claimed they had seen her knocked down by another boy named Paul Flores, who landed on top of her, but once she was helped up, she went on with talking with her friends. There were around 60 people at the party that night. Some had been invited, and some had shown up after word of mouth. There was even the typical fist fight at this particular kegger that night. Kristen's behavior had been described as weird. She was acting very flirtatious and highly active.
I wonder if maybe she had been slipped something in her drink.
I don't know. It sounds to me if she was acting
strange,
very active, yeah. like it's they put the wrong thing in there then.
Maybe. And like they said that like some people seen her drinking, some people didn't see her drinking.
Right,
so
like unconfirmed reports.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So by 2 a.m., senior Tim Davis was helping to clear out the party when he noticed one of the freshman girls, Kristen, passed out on the front lawn. When he tried helping her up, she seemed to be too out of it to get herself home. So he and another female student, Cheryl Anderson, decided to walk her the 10-minute walk to her dorm at Merhall. Cheryl's party escort had left, so she felt a little safer walking with the group since they would pass by her dorm on the way. As they started down the street, another student from the party, Paul Flores, came out of nowhere offering to help carry her home.
Paul's just popping in at all the right moments, huh?
Would seem that way.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Once the group got to campus, Cheryl reassured Tim that she and Paul could basically just take Kristen the rest of the way, and he could just head back to his dorm since it was the complete opposite direction.
Mm.
As Cheryl, Paul, and Kristen cut through the campus property, Kristen would occasionally need to stop and take a break. I mean, she's drunk, so...
Yeah.
Totally understand that, like, need to take a break and...
Well, usually the drunken breaks are pretty involuntary.
Right. You know, and if she's so out of it that she can't even walk herself home, yeah, it's pretty bad.
If her brain's like, yo, listen, we got
to
get home,
and
her body's like, you're drunk.
You're done.
We're done.
Yeah, right. So each time they would stop for these breaks, Paul would kind of motion for Cheryl and tell her, like, hey, you can just go ahead if you want. And she kind of thought this was strange.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
She decided to just go ahead and like wait for them each time and continue walking with them.
Good. Because I'd be like, what? Screw you, creep.
Right. But once they reached Grand Avenue, Cheryl made the decision to split up from Paul and Kristen because her dorm was just about a block south from where they were. While Paul's dorm in Santa Lucia, I can't say it, was just right in front of Merhall where Kristen lived in her dorm. So he ended up just walking her the rest of the way. I can only imagine, like, this is in no way, shape, or form Cheryl's fault either, but I can only imagine the guilt that she's probably placed on herself
absolutely.
That night, you know?
Yeah.
But she...
I mean,
when you're a college student,
you could have, you know, finished the walk there. You know what I mean? And but then she would have been by herself on
exactly.
her way back. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so something
exactly.
bad could have happened to her too.
Right.
So like, yeah, she definitely shouldn't blame herself mm-hmm. for that because it's not her fault.
Absolutely
in any
not.
Way.
And I mean, I'm sure that Paul seemed like a really nice guy for offering to help. Walk
oh yeah
home.
Sure yeah oh hey a super drunk
yeah.
chick hey
well,
I'll take care of you just I'm, go on it'll
right.
be fine.
And you know, when you're young like that, and especially at a college like this, like, I'm sure that they felt really safe.
Yeah,
like nothing's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, everybody always feels like that.
Oh, absolutely,
which is kind of bad. You ever notice that, like, especially in small towns where some terrible incident will happen, you know, and everybody that's interviewed is always like, oh, you know, that kind of stuff just doesn't happen in our small town.
Right, because
doesn't
you don't ever
here.
Think it's going to happen.
But it does. It happens
it does.
Everywhere.
Absolutely. So Cheryl did, however, kind of keep peeking back as she walked on toward her dorm just to, like, triple check to make sure that he was taking her. And I forgot to mention that before she actually walked away, she made certain that he would take her straight to her dorm. She kept asking him over and over and over, like, are you sure you'll take her? Because if you don't want to take her, I will take her. And he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I promise I will take her. You're fine. Just go ahead and go. So, again, she's getting this reassurance that everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, May 26th, when Kristen's parents, Denise and Stan, hadn't received a call from Kristen, they figured that she may have forgotten about the fact that it was a long weekend, and she would most likely call the next day on Monday. What they didn't know was that one of Kristen's dorm neighbors had noticed that her wallet, keys, and personal items were still in her room, but nobody had seen Kristen since the party on Friday. This is when the neighbor reached out to campus police to file a missing persons report. However, campus police told the student that there was no need to file a report, that Kristen had probably just decided to leave campus for the weekend. And it wasn't until another student had insisted that something be done and decided to call not only Elizabeth's parents, but the San Luis Obispo Police Department. And it was then that the campus police finally opened up a file on Kristen.
Okay. There we go again with police assuming they know what they're talking about. I mean, that's a good assumption, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but...
That's fair.
I do know that after this incident, they did put a law in place that campus police have to report missing persons, like, right at that moment. They can't assume. Right. Yeah, so it's really good that something... at least good came out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. When the Smarts were contacted, they were asked if Kristen had come home for the weekend. This, combined with the fact that Kristen never called, is when they knew something was wrong. When they reached out to campus police, they were told that it wasn't unusual for young college girls to go off campus for the weekend, and she would most likely turn up at the start of the week. So... it wasn't until a week after Kristen was last seen that an official missing persons report was filed by campus police. Their report noted an officer observation, while included things like, Kristen does not have any close friends at Cal Poly. Kristen appeared to be under the influence of alcohol on Friday during a party. Kristen was socializing with several males at the party. Kristen lived her life in her own way and does not conform to the typical teenage behavior. They also made sure to include a final statement by saying, these observations in no way imply that her behavior caused her disappearance, but they do provide a picture of her conduct on the night she went missing.
That is ridiculous.
That is really ridiculous.
It's like saying, oh, like, it's not her fault, but it's kind of her fault.
Yeah, it's basically her fault, but, like, it's not exactly what we're saying.
Ugh, that stuff makes me sick. But it is that kind of thing.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Like, who are you? Okay?
Yeah.
Ugh.
God. As soon as campus police had called in two outside detectives, they focused in on Paul Flores, considering he had been the last one to see Kristen on May 25th, 1996. They were able to poke holes in his statement, as there were many inconsistencies in his account. In one of his interviews, Paul had told authorities that he had watched Kristen walk toward her dorm before he entered his building. But after speaking with his roommate, who had been away all that weekend, they found Paul told him that he had walked Kristen home before he made it back to his room. According to the police report, Paul's roommate also stated that he had joked with Paul and asked him what he did with Kristen, and Paul said, Kristen is home with my parents.
I'm sorry, but I don't really think that you would joke like that. I mean, like, being Paul and be like, oh yeah, she's home with my parents. I mean, I don't know, maybe he is that big of a douchebag, but that seems
That's just weird. That's a weird thing to say.
Exactly.
Like, me and my buddy Chris, we have some really weird joke times. Weird things that occur within those joke times and stuff like that. Like, really weird. Mm-hmm. Like, people that didn't know us would probably be like, let's go the other direction.
Right.
But she's home with my parents.
Right. It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I was actually thinking about that while I was researching this. And I'm like, you and I have some pretty dark humor.
We do.
And
yeah.
I wouldn't even say something like that.
No way, man.
I don't know. It's weird.
That's just a really weirdly phrased.
Exactly. Especially thing. Coming from people that, like, do have dark humor and crack, like, bad jokes, you know? Like, I don't think that's normal.
No. So They also discovered that Paul had a black eye during his interview, and when asked, he told detectives that he had been elbowed while playing basketball on the Monday after the frat house party. Yet when another friend who played with him was tracked down, he was very adamant that Paul already had the black eye on Sunday before the game and told him that he wasn't sure how he got it. He just woke up with it. When authorities pressed Paul more, he told them that he had been embarrassed because he actually got the black eye while working on a vehicle at his parents' house. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they're already finding many inconsistencies in his story. So, to me, that's a huge red flag right there.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So, it's suspicious.
Very suspicious. I work on vehicles, and I don't think I've ever gotten a black eye from one of them.
And who would be embarrassed by being like, oh, yeah, I got a black eye from working on a car?
Like, I punched myself in the face with a wrench.
I would be more embarrassed of being like, oh, I got my ass kicked and got a black eye. Like, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So stupid. I don't know.
Petty.
He's probably embarrassed. That's the truth.
Because she probably elbowed him during a struggle or something, trying to get away from him. Mm-hmm. I bet it was something really like that.
Yeah, because I got a feeling that Paul Flores is not a good guy. Mm-mm. Okay, so when authorities really started to dig into who Paul Flores was, they found that he was known by many on campus and in his hometown of Arroyo Grande as a bit of a creep. He was lewd and obnoxious, especially when he was drinking. He would hit on girls, put his hands on them, and really creep them out to the extent that they nicknamed him Chester the Molester.
Ugh, God, I hate, like, the Lester, the Molester. I don't know, there's something about that phrase that, like, really grosses me out.
Yeah, Chester? Why Chester? I don't get it.
I don't know.
My name's Paul Flores, but you can call me Chester the Molester.
What's up, Chet?
Nice to meet you.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it sounds like he's, like, a straight, legit creep.
Yeah, he sounds like a gem.
Jeepers, creepers.
Where'd you get that
terrible
ugly face?
Obnoxious terrible nickname. Behavior. Right.
Now, usually lewd and obnoxious people, when they drink, it only gets worse.
Oh, yeah. We know a couple of people like that.
Who?
One specifically.
Are you talking about me?
No. I'm not. So, eventually, Paul agreed to take a polygraph test. However, each time detectives tried to set up a date to perform the test, Paul would back out for one reason or another, until they finally just tracked him down and brought him in.
How do you back out?
Well,
it
can be a voluntary thing, unless it's like court ordered, which I don't even know if they really do court ordered polygraph tests anymore, because they're not really admissible in court.
Yeah, so I don't think
so. They do offer them, and if you agree to it, it makes you look better than if you like don't agree to take one. Usually people that don't, and in my opinion, like, it's always better to not take one. But in police's eyes, if you don't want to agree to take a polygraph test, then it makes you look kind of guilty.
I guess it's just
like whichever way you want to throw it. But apparently in this case, like, he said he would, but then he kept backing out, and they finally just brought him in. Once he was there, he was like, yeah, I'm not taking this.
I don't want to do it. I've been backing out because I'm, like, nervous and don't want to do it.
Right. Instead, he agreed to another interview. And this is when he admitted to police that he had taken a shower after walking back from taking Kristen home instead of going to bed like he had initially told them. Mm. And he also admitted at this point to lying about that black eye.
Right, okay.
Once they pressed Paul for more information, he became extremely anxious, like real fidgety and like just ridiculous, super strange.
Trying to muster up some fake information that makes sense.
Exactly. Finally, he just snapped at them and said, if you're so smart, then why don't you just tell me where the body is? And they're like,
where the body is?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oops.
Right. Right.
Nobody said it was a murder yet.
Exactly.
Nobody said it was a homicide or anything other than a missing persons case.
So he, in my opinion, slipped up right there.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Hell yeah, he did.
So even though they were, like, super sure that Paul Flores was responsible, they couldn't prove anything because they didn't have enough physical evidence. And, of course, there wasn't a body at this point.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just, like, floored.
Exactly.
What a fucking moron.
Yeah. Once classes were out for the summer, Paul had actually moved back home with his parents, and police decided to bring in cadaver dogs to St. Lucia Hall. They ended up bringing in three different dogs at three different times, and each one of them went straight for Paul's dorm. So they didn't even actually, like, lead the dogs straight to Paul's dorm. They just took them into the actual building and let the dogs kind of, like, track the scent to wherever they went. And they beelined it for his dorm door. Mm-hmm. Once they were inside, they kept hitting on a corner of his bed. So police then decided to just take the bed out, bring in another dog, and the same thing happened, but they were going straight for the spot on the floor right where his bed was. So they were, like, just positive that something was going on there because these are the dogs. These are actual cadaver dogs. So they will only track down the scent of decay.
Yeah.
So unless, I mean, there's a possibility that she could have been there on his bed or on his floor, or he had been around something that was decaying and, like, maybe articles of clothing had laid on his floor, piled up, or on his bed or something. That's just my guess. So that, I thought that was really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
The fact that they brought in three different dogs at three different times.
Pretty
and
they thorough.
All hit. Right. I also wanted to mention, too, that there was a woman named Mary Ann who had rented the Flores house. So they put their house up for rent, and Paul had been living here right after or right around the time that Kristen went missing. And she had mentioned that there was some really crazy stuff in this house. So apparently at one point, so the police would come there and kind of like harass them a little bit, thinking that they were like involved in it or knew something.
Sure.
And then eventually they were able to actually cooperate with the police because she had been outside washing her car, and when she was bent down, she found an earring. Mm. And when she picked it up, it looked like there was kind of like a fingerprint in what looked like dried blood on the earring.
Okay.
So she said she bagged it up and wrote like the time, date, where she found it at, and so on and so forth.
That's really smart.
Right. And she handed it over to police. However, police ended up losing this earring.
What?
Nobody knows where it's at.
Oh, my.
It's gone.
God.
But get this, right after she found this, her and her husband were driving into town, and she just so happened to look over, and there was like one of these billboards that's like, have you seen Kristen?
Yeah.
And she's wearing the exact like necklace and earring set. And let me tell you, this set is not just like some basic silver or gold hoops that anybody could have. Like, this was a very particular set. The earring that she found and the set that she was wearing in the photograph was this, like, silver teardrop. And in the middle is, like, a second teardrop that's, like, this super pretty, like, turquoise color. So it's not, like, something that everybody would have.
Right.
You know, it's, like, very specific.
Yeah.
Another thing, Trav and I were talking about this. She had mentioned that every single morning at 4:20 a.m., they would hear a watch alarm go off.
Yeah.
Now, she claimed that their bedroom, the way that their bedroom was, it kind of faced the backside of the house. And their bed sat right up against the window that faced the backside of the house. And they kept it open because it was always hot in there.
Mm-hmm.
And every single morning at 4:20, they could hear this watch going off. And they could never find it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't know. Like, we kind of went over this. Like, would you be able to hear it? Would you not be able to hear it? But if their window's open, they'd probably be able to hear this. But she said that they went out and tried to dig and dig and dig, and they, when they got so far, they hit concrete. So, I mean, that's kind of suspicious in my opinion, because apparently they had ended up concreting like a big patio slab out back.
Because I don't know if we actually mentioned it before, but we had speculated that maybe she had been buried in the concrete or under the concrete.
Exactly.
And like her watch was still on her or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just a theory, like a hypothesis. I think that you probably wouldn't hear like a watch alarm.
Right.
Maybe like a cell phone alarm, because that's substantially louder. But like, you got to think like
a through wrist watch concrete.
Through concrete, for one. And then I don't know.
Like maybe if she, like her, it is her watch, and it's just laying out in the ground somewhere, and like it just got skipped over. Like that's a possibility that they could hear that through their bedroom.
I mean,
window.
It could be smashed down into the grass right. to the point where like a lawnmower wouldn't suck exactly. it up and spit it out or anything like that. It could just barely be. Mm-hmm. Under the surface.
Yeah. But could you imagine hearing that thing go off every morning at 4 a.m.? And it would make sense, too. Like, if she set her alarm to get up at 4:20 every morning to, like, mm-hmm. get ready for school or go for a run before class or something.
Yep. Like, or even the totally other thing that everybody's sense. Thinking right now.
Yeah. Maybe somebody had mentioned, like, oh, maybe she was, like, getting up to go smoke weed. But I highly doubt, like, even if she was a big pothead that she's gonna go
every day.
Yeah, like I highly
who has that much marijuana.
I'm assuming that it was for her to get up and either take a run before class or to start getting ready for class,
right?
Because that would make more sense in my opinion.
Absolutely.
One other thing too was that she, Marianne, the lady that was renting the house, said that they had spotted a little bit of blood that was on the wall in the bathroom and on the shower curtain that they hadn't noticed like when they first moved in.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never tested either. So it's very strange that, like, police harassed them all this time but never, like, took care of this or right. handled any of the evidence. Yeah. And I'm not blaming police for this, but it's just, it's very strange.
We never blame anybody whenever we have, like, a little debate back and forth like this kind of deal. It's really, it's just kind of like a...
Like, what happened?
Yeah, like, what's up? Like,
how
you
did
know,
this happen?
How was this missed?
So towards the end, she and her husband ended up getting evicted from the house for cooperating with police. His parents were not happy about this. So they evicted them. And in the last month that they were there, she was like, you know what? If you guys want to do any testing, you guys can come in and do it now. So they ended up bringing ground penetrating radar, which did produce one anomaly under the concrete. But they never really figured out exactly what this was. So it could be her under there, or it could just be, I know sometimes these things, like, it looks like there's something under there, but then once they get in, it could just be like a shadow or something.
Or an air pocket.
Right.
Or
so
a cavity.
It's never been determined that, like, she for sure was buried under this concrete.
So they never took any further steps beyond that
no.
point. There's a strange obstruction underneath the concrete, but we're not going to look any further than
this. Yeah, it's really odd.
So they rocked out three different dogs at three different times, but they're not going to go through the effort to pay a construction dude to backhoe some concrete.
It's odd. It's very strange.
That's pretty messed up.
Yeah.
All right. But continuing, according to the LA Times, several days after Kristen went missing, authorities conducted a search at local Cold Canyon landfill, but nothing was turned up. After digging close to 18 feet down, and the search was cut short after a couple days. Paul eventually dropped out of college and moved back to Arroyo Grande before moving to Lawndale. He's had many run-ins with law enforcement for drunk driving. Idiots. You know, mm-hmm. that really irritates the crap out of me. You know, people, oh, I got three DUIs.
Yeah.
Really? So you still haven't learned.
Learn your lesson, bro.
Good for you. You're a really bright crayon.
Apparently he's not learned his lesson for a lot of things.
Yeah, obviously. And even had multiple women come forward with claims that Paul Flores, Chester the molester, had either raped or sexually assaulted them. Even still, he has not been convicted of anything regarding these claims or on charges related to Kristen's case, despite the fact that he is the main suspect.
Ugh, I hate that kind of stuff.
It
infuriates me.
Me too. It's like, it's obvious. It's so obvious, but they just, what? Why not?
Yeah.
Why? Just make something up.
I know that one of these girls was his cousin that came forward and was like, listen, he is weird. He, at one point, I guess, like, they had playfully taken his wallet, and he ended up like tackling one of his cousins after he got his wallet back and was still quote unquote searching and like sticking his hands down her shirt and groping her. So this is the kind of person that this sicko is.
Yeah. God. There had also been theories that Scott Peterson could have been involved in Kristen's disappearance, as he had also attended Cal Poly. Even still, police believe that Paul Flores is a more logical person of interest.
Which, I mean, I agree with that as well. That makes more sense to me.
Kristen was officially declared dead in 2002, and the Smart family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Paul Flores in November of 1996, but it was stalled pending the criminal investigation.
On September 6, 2016, during a news conference held by the San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Office, they stated that new information had developed in Kristen's case that had suggested her remains could possibly be found along the hillside that was near the P of the Cal Poly sign. And this was after cadaver dogs had hit in that area back in January of 2016, even though it had been searched back in, I believe, June of 1996. They had decided to go ahead and perform a dig that lasted about 4 days. And this ended up providing, I think, bones and possible other items of interest, though it's never been confirmed what was found. I do think that I had read somewhere that there was possible animal remains that were found.
Okay.
But again, I don't want to quote that as like 100% because when I went back to look for it, I couldn't find it. So it could have just been like one article or something that I had read at some point. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's interesting how they've done so much digging, but still never ever dug back at the,
at
the place
house.
Where all the friggin' evidence
right.
was.
That's
you know
what I
mean?
Would think. Like Jesus. Maybe dig there and see. Yeah. I don't know.
Was I like just not paying attention or what's the deal with like, what was their tip for digging in that specific area?
Because the cadaver dog, like they took out
the dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure why they took cadaver dogs there, but yeah. I don't know. It's very strange.
It is. I mean, if they just detect decay, it could have been like a dead bird.
Right,
that was
and
buried.
That's what I thought that I had read. Like I said, animal remains, but again, that could be totally wrong.
Especially if they're, you know, solely trained on like human decay, because I'm sure there's differences.
Right,
in
true,
decay.
True. Yeah, exactly.
So maybe
yeah,
there was something.
Right. Then just recently, about a week ago. Kristen's case was actually brought back into the spotlight after the Stockton Record published an article on January 18th saying that Denise, Kristen's mother, had been contacted by a former FBI agent and was told to be ready, that this was something that they wouldn't expect, and that the family may want to get away for a while. However, this looks like it may have just been a hoax because the federal agents have said that they did not contact the Smart family about a break in the case. So, that's disgusting.
Yeah,
if
man.
This was just like some loser
yeah.
calling them saying this. But again, you would think that if Denise got this call, like she would know whether or not this was a former agent that worked with her family. So I kind of thought that was odd too.
Well, they former FBI agent, that could mean
right.
anybody.
True.
That resigned or no longer was associated
yeah.
actively with the FBI.
I was really excited when I seen that and like
yeah.
super hopeful for yeah. the family, and then like my heart just sank
yeah,
as soon as I found
up.
Out. Yeah.
Like that's just seriously fucked up.
Ugh, so heartbreaking.
I don't understand why people do things
yeah.
of that nature.
Like,
it's
why
just...
do you insert yourself in an investigation like this for like crap, you know, like fake information, or like when people admit to crimes that they didn't commit or place people at places that they weren't really at, or even something yeah. like this. Like,
imagine,
don't do that.
Imagine to yourself how it would make you feel if someone else did to you what you were thinking about doing to somebody.
Right.
You know, look at it that way, from that perspective, before you act on anything. And if it hurts your feelings or makes you feel uneasy or uncomfortable or sad or whatever, don't do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, don't commit murder.
Yeah. It's hurtful. It really is.
Yeah. So the sheriff's office encourages anybody with information to report it through Crime Stoppers online, or you can call them at 805-549-7867. It is anonymous.
Yes.
You will be anonymous.
Exactly.
Nobody will know that you called. So if you have any information on Kristen Smart's case or anybody else.
Absolutely.
Anywhere. Call Crime Stoppers, 805-549-7867.
Yes. Hopefully, there's somebody out there that will come forward and give this family some closure, finally.
Yeah.
They just want to know where she is and what happened. And
closure is important.
Yes.
It's an important thing.
Yes. If anybody has any information, like Trav said, please, please contact.
Or if anybody would like to, of their own volition, start a petition to get the backyard dug up underneath the concrete where that discrepancy within the ground-penetrating radar, you know, to have that dug up, then that would be a really cool thing. I would think cool that thing.
They would have done that.
I do
it's
too.
So strange.
I mean, like,
I can't imagine like what is preventing them through all of these other digs that they. I don't know. It's
yeah, they've done a lot of digging, strange. But it seems like it's really just been like.
Yeah.
You know, like a wild goose
chase.
And
this is like a relevant spot, it seems like.
It seems like a very relevant spot. You know, there's blood on the like in the house and the little shed thing.
The earring.
Something about what about that trash can
thing?
Oh
yeah, I forgot to mention like his dad kept coming over while that Marianne and her husband were living there and wanting to get this trash can. Like he came over like 2 or 3 times, like super adamant about wanting to get this trash can that he finally got. So
that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Yeah, that was probably heavy on evidence, and then of course there was the earring, and wasn't there another item found or something else other than the watch, the earring, and the trash can?
No, I think that was it. The blood, and then just the police coming over constantly, like wanting information from them.
So
it was
weird.
Strange, very strange.
Absolutely.
Behavior. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, this was the Kristen Smart case.
It was indeed.
Yes. We are so appreciative of you guys for hanging out with us. We're getting excited to end season one. Can't believe it's already coming to an end.
I know, we're getting close.
Mm-hmm, but we promise you our last few episodes will be some shebangs.
Yeah,
so
be shebang-erific.
And then we will take a short break after season one's over before we hop into season two, and it's going to be a good one.
It's going to be intense.
Yeah, so make sure that you subscribe to our podcast.
Yes.
You rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Yes.
Good rates, good reviews. Right. Yes.
Yes. Make sure to follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
And Twitter.
Yes.
@ Hello Crime. And I think, we started a Facebook group too as well.
Yes.
Where you can come on and like, you know, we have discussions and we chit chat.
That's right.
It's fun. It's the Hello, My Name is True Crime discussion group. Come chat with us. We love it.
Yes. Now there are numerous places in which you can interact with us.
Yes.
So do it to it.
Also, don't forget that our merch shop is up. We have our new shirt logo design on. And any sales that are made in January, all proceeds go to Sarah Turney to help with the billboards for her missing sister, Alyssa Turney. You can also check out her podcast, Voices for Justice. I promise you will not be disappointed.
She is legit.
Yes.
Too legit to quit.
Too legit to quit. All right, guys. We love you. Yes. Yes.
So much. Oh, yeah.
All right. Bye.
Hasta la vista, baby.
That was a Titancast episode.